This week, Indonesia elected a blind, or partially blind at least, Muslim cleric as its president. He was the dark horse candidate, and his election triggered violence in the streets by supporters of the favored candidate, Megawati Soekarnoputri. Today, Megawati was elected vice president, and that seems to have calmed the protests. But many say the government now is so broad-based that it might be more than a bit unwieldy, and we're going to talk about it. We're joined now by Imran Anwar, founder of Imran Net Services in New York, pioneer of internet email in Pakistan, well-known expert on India, Pakistan, and Southeast Asia. Hi, Imran.
Hello, George.
Let me ask, first of all, I think Americans get a bit confused as to how this gentleman was elected president, because we understood Ms. Megawati had won a significant victory earlier this year in the parliament in terms of her party. So what exactly happened?
Correct. The system is somewhat different from most places in the world, but it's not that unusual in that the parliament members themselves elect who the head of state will be. And that is indeed the body in front of which President Habibie had gone, basically remorseful and wringing his hands and begging forgiveness for his mistakes and asking to be given another chance. And that's the body which basically rejected his request and elected the new leader.
So what happens is that it's a parliamentary system, and Mr. Habibie found himself with a vote of no confidence.
Absolutely.
So then they open up, in essence, for new elections.
Absolutely, or they elect a new leader.
But that's done in the parliament.
Exactly.
Not by popular vote.
Not by popular vote, but generally you would expect that the people who are in parliament represent the masses, obviously, so there would be a likelihood. But that sort of applies to the method of using delegates here to elect candidates and
Well, let me ask about that. Here's what happened, if I'm correct, if I understand it correctly, Imran. What happened is that a coalition of parties in the parliament supported the gentleman who won, and Mr. Wahid.
Wahid.
And Ms. Megawati lost by a few votes with a smaller group of people, smaller coalition of these folks voting for her in the parliament. And that's how parliamentary systems work. The parliament itself votes for the leader, and though her party had the most seats, it didn't have a majority.
Right, and in addition, even if she had the majority, George, sometimes things can happen where people, once they're in parliament, they will always be wheeling and dealing going on.
Right,
or in an ideal world, they will be making the best decision based upon what is right for the country, not right for the party or for their own personal friend.
But this is less egregious. It's more likely to take place under the circumstances and more accepted, certainly, more as part of normal parliamentary procedure, am I correct, than certainly would be the case if the popular vote elected a president in this country and the delegates voted against it, the Electoral College voted against it. That would be very unusual.
Indeed.
Possible, but very unusual.
Exactly,
yeah.
It is possible. Now, in a parliamentary system, let's not forget that, again, the unrest that we saw was for an outside viewer or a person sitting in the United States looking out, they would say, there must have been some cheating or... Again, the wishes of the people have not been listened to. No, there was nothing unusual done. It's just that the parliament elected a person based upon however the coalitions formed, however the groupings formed.
Right. She won a victory in 30. It said that her party won 34% of the popular vote in June's election of the assembly. And her party, I assume then, is one of, if not the largest party in the parliament, but may not have a majority, apparently does not, and all of these other splinter parties get together and they can form a larger group and elect whoever they want. That's how parliamentary systems work. In any case, that's what happened. Now there was violence in the street by her supporters, and most recently she was elected vice president. What kind of a procedure is that, and how do you assess what has gone on?
Again, basically, George, the vice president had to be elected from within the parliament as they elected the president. Now, technically speaking, in the past, they may have had a tendency, especially when you had almost an elected dictator in place. The idea would be for Mr. Suharto, for example, to have a crony elected as vice president.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, possibly, there could have been a possibility that had there been a coalition that was broad-based enough to choose Mr. Waheed, but not really caring much for Megawati, they could have done something unusual. They could have elected Mr. Waheed as the president and some unknown person as the vice president. Now, whether the fact that they elected her vice president was based upon the fact that she does not have that much political experience, she is not well known as a statesperson yet because she hasn't had those opportunities to lead and rule, or whether it was because people felt, oh, if we choose somebody else, there will be unrest. Who knows how the minds of these people worked. In either case, it was a fairly good decision because we have, and Mr. Waheed, the person who is ailing, but he is a religious leader and respected religious leader, yet not a fundamentalist or a fanatic. As a matter of fact, he is so he's respected, but he is so middle of the road and so temperate that some of the more conservative religious leaders consider him anti-religion, actually, anti-Islam, actually.
He's been accused of being too Western and too liberal.
Exactly, and his only crime really is to say tolerance is the message, and that's what the message of Islam is. So he treats Islam in the same way a good religious scholar would, that it is a way of life, mm-hmm. and it does have an influence on politics, but it should not be running the politics of a country, especially which has.
He sounds almost too good to be true, and so I will ask you about your assessment of him, because he is said to be a person who does preach the separation of church and state. He is for human rights. He has been criticized for taking a very positive, proactive stance on how Jews and Muslims should try to understand each other better, and so on. He has. Apparently has great respect with the army. Some say that I've read that they, you know, in essence, if he has anything you can criticize him for, is that he's so saintly that it's virtually impossible to debate him on an issue that it's like trying to debate the Pope, I guess. I mean, that's some of his political opponents apparently have been quoted as saying that. So it almost sounds like an impossibly perfect person. What is your assessment of him?
That's a very valid point. Obviously, there is no such thing as a perfect human being or a perfect leader on the planet today. But in terms of the balance that he brings between politics and religion, it is indeed the best of both worlds.
Hard to believe that his election then would have triggered so much violence by Ms. Magwati's supporters. Are they... is she diametrically opposed in any way to his positions?
No, not at all. Actually, it is when the youth of the problem in countries like Indonesia or even Pakistan and in India or Bangladesh is that the youth generally are very emotional and fall very easily into the hands of the political parties that can fan the flames of personality worship. And basically, if you don't have it your way, then you don't accept it. So it was not opposition to him as much as personality worship. Sukarnoputri, and the problem there is that the youth needs to understand that there are bigger issues than just getting, for example, in Pakistan, there's bigger issues than just bringing Benazir Bhutto into power. The issue would be, how do you bring the best possible government into power? So the same thing is basically happening here. Now, keep in mind that if Mr. Waheed came into power, he had the backing of the military also, because if the army's candidate, so to speak, had stayed in, there would have been a fractious vote, and that would have caused problems for him. So basically, the good thing here is that even though, you know, you pointed out that there is a likelihood of the government being so broad-based that it will be hard to manage, but the fact is that this the person who was elected came in with a very broad base of support also. Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a close. He won 373 assembly votes. She won 313. So they carry a lot of power between them.
Absolutely. And
now was it, let me just ask this: her election as vice president is do you think that was done to appease the students rioting in the streets, or was this an inevitable choice under the circumstances?
As I said earlier, George, we will never know, but quite frankly, that's exactly where the people may have been wanting to do it. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the point that the assembly may have been planning on voting her vice president anyway.
Now, let me ask about something else. The I mentioned at the top, and there would be no reason to mention other than for this reason, and that is that he is inevitably referred to as partly blind and frail, and when you see him on television and find out he's only 59, it's a shock because he looks 80.
Right.
So frail is certainly the term, and he's had a stroke or two. Is his weakened health likely to be a factor here?
Absolutely, George. That will be something we have to be on the lookout for, because we are very fortunate that he's a very reasonable person, because sometimes the problem can be that somebody who has no stake in living beyond the next couple of years can really lead people down the path of destruction and do something just to go down in history as a fairy leader or something. In his case, we're very fortunate in his being this religious/sane, reasonable political character. The only thing he doesn't have much experience of is, again, international statesmanship, for example. Now, that's where it would be highly in the interest of countries like the United States and Europe and Australia, for example, to step in and make sure that he has the best possible facilities and services and consulting services available, both as a person from the physical perspective, but also advisors in economics and economic rebuilding and political rebuilding and institution rebuilding, so that hopefully he lives to be 80 or 90 or whatever, but in the meantime, so that he can get right to the job of fixing up things that have gone unfixed for so long.
Let me ask, does a vice president step in automatically if something happens to the president in Indonesian politics?
I believe they do, but I believe this also requires some level of approval from the parliament, I'm not exactly sure.
There would ultimately be probably a very quick vote of confidence in the parliament, or need for
exactly.
One.
Exactly.
Yeah, and because they'd have to call for a vote of confidence within a certain period of time. That varies, I suspect, from country to country in their parliamentary system. But in any case, Ms. Magwati would be in line to take over. Do you know, we've talked about his politics, and I mean, he's virtually a human rights activist based on what we're talking about, support of separation of church and state, human rights. He's been strong on human rights, promotion of democracy, and as I've said, he's, if anything, been accused of being a little too liberal and a little too Western. What about her politics?
Actually, George, it's interesting. It's her politics is not that different from his, and that is why in a parliamentary body which sort of had to elect between the two.
Am I correct? Now, back me up on this, or let me back up on this and ask you, is her father the past president of
exactly.
of Indonesia, Sukarno?
President Sukarno, who also was somewhat Suharto-like in his time. So
I was going to say, he was a tough guy.
Yeah, he was.
He
no
was not exactly. He didn't fit any of the description we're reading here of Mr.
Wahid. Right.
He doesn't
absolutely
fit that description.
This again, George, goes back to my biggest complaint, or my biggest my pet peeve, if I may use that word. About politics in developing countries, whether they be Indonesia or Pakistan, it's all due to a lack of education and because of people's hope for a magic solution to their problems, personality, the cult of personality sort of goes even deeper. Here in the United States, we might worship sports heroes and mm-hmm. Showbiz mm-hmm. people and actually laugh at our political leaders. In countries like Pakistan, Indonesia, and most of the developing world, it is the personality worship of these leaders that keeps people going, because that's the only hope that they have of actually looking forward to a solution, which never comes, actually.
Now, in other words, we all do it, but it is to a greater degree, almost to the extremes, that they have politics by personality in these countries.
Absolutely. George, the reason we don't do it here in the United States as much is because even our, I will not speak for the very poor in this country, but the lower middle class mm-hmm. people can afford a car. You're poor if you only have a black and white TV.
And also, I think we have a little different culture. We have a culture of where we tend to get more, maybe it comes from the European or the Western influence, but we tend to get more from attacking or ridiculing politicians than we do from worshiping them.
That too, George, but if you look back a little bit, you will see that when we had the Great Depression, then we were also in the United States looking towards our leaders as the as the people, you know, bringing the New Deal and the great new future. So it will always depend a lot on how much bread and butter is available.
Well,
to
that's
you on
that's
your table.
A good point. Now let me ask this then: this woman's politics, you say, are very similar in a broad way to Mr. Waheed's.
Basically, I'm possibly being a little cynical, but again, the politics for a lot of these people were get Suharto out, get me in, and then I'll see what my politics
What's
are.
Next? And now here, what is, you know, what? How do you assess their ability to work together, and how do you assess their skills at accomplishing some of the things that you've touched on? The economy in Indonesia is in shambles. They have to attract, they have to stabilize things and try to reattract foreign investment. They have separatist movements all over the place, political turmoil. How do you assess their ability to deal with such problems?
The good thing here is, George, that we've seen a dictator sort of thrown out of power and his cronies also thrown out of power. So there's a great, and one of the thorns in your side, the potentially unpopular decision of letting go of a part of the country has already been done. So all the painful stuff has already been done. Now, in the fact that Mr. Waheed is in frail health, may actually be a greater incentive for him to aggressively pursue moderate but aggressive improvements to the economy and life of the people. It would be in her interest, Ms. Sukarno Putri's interest, to make sure that she does not come across as or be perceived as someone standing in the way for her personal gain. Now, if he was 40 years old and in great health and she is the same age as she is, she could always see him as a potential threat for the next 30 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If she plays her cards right, she should actually work very closely with him because they both lack, on their own, the statesmanship or stateswomanship, if we want to be politically correct, of international as well as national level control of a nation, which is the largest Muslim population on the planet. So the fact that he is moderate, she is liberal enough, and she also has the political family background, but nothing to be proud of with the things that her father did, this would be a great opportunity for them both to build on the statesman experience, for him to show the world and the rest of not that region but the whole world that Islam and moderate leadership actually go very well hand in hand, and it's not Islam is not a threat but something that can be worked very closely with the West to bring economic as well as social improvement for people around the world. And thirdly, what these people can do together is for her then to set up a great country where when she comes in with a clean slate so that even her critics at that time cannot say, well, she's after all her father's daughter. So it's a great opportunity for both of them.
Yeah, it's an amazing situation. She is, her base of support has, it's often written, would be the so-called disenfranchised masses in Indonesia. It's an amazing...
Which would make 90% of the population.
Which would be a large part. It's an amazing... demographic group, given her background. She must have been completely in conflict with her father's politics, in her adult life.
Well, when someone's father is in power, then you, that's your politics too.
Mm-hmm.
When these people are the children of the dictatorial yet elected heads of state, you know, whether they be the Bhuttos of the world or the Indira Gandhis of the world, or the Sukarnos and Suhartos of the world, they do not consider themselves any less than royalty. As a matter of fact, they actually get away with more than Prince Charles can get away with in England. So the problem is that when you come into power, you still come in as Benazir Bhutto, in her mind, is still the person who is destined to rule Pakistan. It's her natural birthright, almost. So that is something these people grow up with and live with, and that is the thing that eventually destroys the nations that they're managing as well as their political futures. And I don't know if she's going to be any different in the long run.
Well, he's been accused of almost being too westernized, which would logically lead you to believe that he would get along well with the West in terms of relationships and so on. But if her base of support is the so-called disenfranchised masses. They might be pretty unhappy. Inevitably, in every country, they're very unhappy with the West. What would her position be in terms of relationships with the West?
Okay, let's put that in perspective. That's a good point, but let's put that in perspective. When he is considered, she's not considered anti-West. She's actually, like, the very fact that she's a woman, an educated woman trying to lead a country, sort of puts her at the head of the same part of the population that would be as happy being pro-West as anti-West, depending on what the political issues of the day are. They are disenfranchised with their local leadership, not with what America has done to them, or what the great Satan has done to them. In his case, when we say he is perceived as being extremely Western or pro-Western, it's relatively speaking, it's when you think of the fact that if you consider him a religious leader and a respected cleric, that any leaning that he has towards moderation will be considered excessive liberal attitudes or westernization.
I see.
So you have to take it in perspective.
Now, let me ask you, their next move is going to be, or his, and I assume she'll be take a large part in it, but their next move is going to be to form a cabinet.
Absolutely.
How and what are you expecting to come from? I mean, is this going to be, again, a cabinet of appeasement and cover so many bases that they won't be able to get this thing going? Or what are you expecting?
The problem will be, George, that even though these two people might want to create a very good impression that they're here to solve problems and clean out, root out all evil, the problem will be that in the parliament itself, you will still have people, and this happens in countries all over the world, includes India, this includes Pakistan. No matter who comes into power, unless like a dictator in Pakistan comes and throws out everybody, what happens is that the elected parliamentarians are generally the same either corrupt very wealthy landowners or industrialists, where sometimes you even have one brother supporting one party and the other brother supporting the other party. So no matter who's in power, there's always the family interest and the business interests are always protected for these people. So if you have these two leaders at the basically at the disposal of a parliament that has members still trying to protect their own interests, they will have a tough time. As a matter of fact, that might bring them closer together. But at the same time, it also provides them there's always the risk that the divide and conquer thing might work, because then either each party might say, I want to be having my way, and that might bring conflict between these two people, and the exploiters in the parliament will try to do that.
Obviously that's the next move, and then what are you expecting, what are you going to be watching for to give you some clear understanding of how successful they're likely to be going forward?
Two things I would actually be watching very aggressively for. One will be basically what power-sharing arrangement that they announce to the world. Two, who they bring into their cabinet. These will be very, very early signals of where they are headed and what the arrangement between the two of them is. So that's what I would be looking for. And third, I would be looking for policy statements that start coming out. But the first two will be the early indicators.
Now, and I want to back up and ask this. What is it that brought him into this position? Why was he voted in by the parliament? He was a dark horse. Megawati looked like the sure candidate. He came from way back in the pack. He had been her supporter. And he has been in opposition with just about everybody. I mean, the right wing aspects, non-cleric aspects, military aspects of Indonesian politics would consider him perhaps too liberal, and the Islamic leaders, the clerics and so on, would think maybe he was pushing too much for separations of church and state and that sort of thing. What is it that, how did the coalition come together and why to put him in power?
That's a very good question, George, and it's a very difficult one to answer. It's I would say that he is in that fortunate position where everybody in the world opposes 20% of what he stands for, but they respect 80% of what he does. So the religious people might support or love 80% of him for his religious convictions and dislike his 20% perceived westernization.
Or his secular views.
Exactly. Now, his moderate views might be liked as 80% of his personality by the moderates, and his being a cleric might be the 20% that they don't like. But the fact of the matter is that there's enough of that, you know, enough of likable stuff about him going around to make him that reasonable candidate.
And bottom line, then, we're almost out of time. Finally, then, obviously this is a, if I'm understanding you correctly and from everything I'm reading, a very positive step forward for Indonesia at this point anyway.
Absolutely, George. As a matter of fact, in the times that you and I have talked about Indonesia in several of the last years, we have been talking about this. It possibly has been one of the most positive times in their history in recent times.
Well, Imran, thank you very much for joining us. As always, we appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you.
Imran Anwar, founder of ImranNet Services in New York, pioneer of internet email in Pakistan, and well-known expert on India, Pakistan, and Southeast Asia.